Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ghost Spider Groupies, the podcast dedicated to Gwen Stacy of Earth 65, also known as Spider Gwen and Ghost Spider, where we review her comics, discuss news, and give our opinions about all things Gwen 65. I'm Pax.
And I'm Abigail. So for today's Week 1 update, we got a couple of things on the list. We recently just came hot off of an interview from the creative team of Spider-Gwen Smash, Melissa Flores and Anid Balam. And so coincidentally, the trade paperback for Spider-Gwen Smash that's collecting all four issues by this creative team is going to be launching August 27th.
Yeah, that's really exciting. But it doesn't include Giant Size, does it?
No.
Which I think that's a bit of a mistake, really, because it's sort of it's part of all of this.
But maybe they'll include it when they collect the entire selection of miniseries into an omnibus. And like, we really did have a great discussion with the two of them.
Yeah, it was a really interesting interview, and I'm really glad that they made themselves available for it. I mean, I'd recommend, you know, anybody who's been reading the book to go listen to that interview and listen to their sort of experiences as comic creators. There's very thoughtful answers.
And so if you feel like double dipping, even if you collected all the floppies, if you really want to support this creative team and Spider-Gwen in general, you should get the trade paperback too and then have them sign it at the conventions.
Yeah. Is that what you're doing, Abigail? Is that?
No, I already collected all the floppies, so I'm just going to... I feel it's more practical for me to have them sign the floppies rather than the trade.
That's fair enough, yeah.
But yeah, moving on, the next item on the list is the solicit for Spider-Gwen The Ghost Spider number 3 has been released a little bit early. Even though it was the June solicits, because of delays, this issue is actually going to be released on July 31st. So it teases a Gwen versus Gwen issue.
I'm not looking forward to another Gwen clone saga again.
I don't think this is a clone saga again.
I hope it's not.
I think it's just because we don't know. It could be a robot, a shapeshifter. It could be an illusion. Hell, it could even be chameleon.
I hope it's like a shapeshifting person. I don't want it to be another copy of Gwen, though. I will say we've had Shadow Clones, Gwenverse. I mean, what are the clone sagas? She was involved with the clone conspiracy.
Well, Clone Conspiracy was 8 years ago.
But it is a Gwen clone saga. A Gwen 65 involved Gwen clone saga.
But Gwen 65 herself being cloned, no, that was just only in Shadow Clones.
And Gwenverse.
Well, to a degree, because that in Gwenverse, that wasn't really cloning. That was just Finale's botched plan splitting aspects of her personality into 5 embodiments.
I think we can safely call them clones. I think it's cloning. It's not a test tube clone. It's a quantum physics clone.
Quantum physics clone. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's go with that.
This is a subcategory that's slightly different. I'm sick of seeing Gwen beat up Gwen. Frankly, it's a tragic thing.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. So that's going to be on sale July 31st.
Yeah. So we are going to get into our new comic here. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are reading the last issue of the Melissa Flores run with Gwen 65. This acts as a bit of an epilogue to the Spider-Gwen Smash series, which we've just finished reading and reviewing on the podcast. It's Giant Size Spider-Gwen number 1. It is, as we said, written by Melissa Flores. It's got art by Alba Glez, inks by Elisabetta D'Amico, colors by Fernando Fuentes Suho, and letters by VC's Ariana Maher. We are just reviewing the main story, the new story that came out in this so-called Giant Size issue, because one half of it is from way back when, and we've already reviewed.
Yes, yeah, Spider-Gwen 2015 B number 13. That was the Halloween issue from Jason Latour, Robbie Rodriguez, and gang. And that was during the long distance arc. We actually did an episode way back in the day, long distance. So if you wanted to read the Halloween story, you can check that episode out.
And I think it's to try and jog the reader's memory that Mysterio exists on Earth 65 with one of his two previous appearances there.
Yeah. Poor Mysterio.
he gets a shit time. He's such a B villain on Earth 65. So he gets a pretty tough time of it. So we encourage everybody to read this issue for themselves. You can pick it up from your local comic book store probably still. You can definitely find it on Amazon to read digitally. We'll probably put a couple of links in the show description for folks to find out where to get it and where it is in the reading order, which I have updated now. So moving swiftly on, what we're going to do is a synopsis, which covers what happens in the issue so that we're all on the same page, so that our memories are jogged. But yeah.
Shall we begin?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So the Mary Janes are back in New York playing a gig when MJ transforms into Carnage mid-song, furious at what she believes to be Gwen messing up a drum solo. Gwen seems practiced at dealing with these freakouts, however, and grabs an electrified power cable to neutralize MJ's symbiote.
With MJ back to normal and apologetic, the band quickly exit from the backstage as the manager at the venue seems keen to capitalize on the rampage by replicating it the next night. While the band recovers elsewhere, they are surprised by the arrival of one Orlando Octavius, fresh from the sad and unexpected death of his adoptive father, Dr. Otto Octavius.
He reveals that he was the financial benefactor behind Bruce Banner's experiments and wants to check in with Mary Jane following her rekindled status as Carnage. Gwen puts herself between Orlando and MJ to stop him from taking her.
Orlando arms up, deploying four robotic tentacles to try to fight Gwen and kidnap MJ. Gwen gets Betty and Glory, who are nearby, to safety while MJ, unwillingly, transforms into Carnage. She turns the trick previously used against her and grabs a live wire to disarm Orlando. Gwen and Carnage quickly swing away.
Gwen calls Natasha, much to Carnage's chagrin, as she still wants to go back to fight Orlando. Gwen updates Natasha on what's going on and asks for her help, but MJ manages to snatch the phone out of her hand. Natasha offers to help MJ in return for her compliance and help. This seems to pacify the still transformed MJ.
Sent by Orlando, Dazzler's sister, Mortis, shows up to apprehend Gwen and MJ in an alley. Gwen is taken aback, realizing that Dazzler is still looking for Mortis, but Mortis doesn't seem bothered, and shoots out an energy blast that Carnage dives to absorb. Gwen webs up Mortis's hands to stop any further attacks, grabs MJ, and swings out of there.
They land in Central Park, where they are engulfed by a yellowish smoke and nightmarish visions of their failures. Mysterio presents himself, declaring his return since their last encounter at the abandoned carnival. However, Mjarnage is less than impressed with his theatrics and reacts by smashing his fishbowl-like helmet.
This really upsets Mysterio, and he subsequently begins to have a panic attack. The two swing away to their meetup spot with Natasha. There, MJ detransforms and explains to Gwen that she will go away with Natasha to learn to live with her symbiote. Gwen wants to talk more about this, but MJ promises they'll find the time eventually, thanking Gwen for being her friend, and says, "I love you." The two tearfully embrace.
Meanwhile, Mortis and Mysterio regroup with Orlando at his office following their defeats. Orlando admits his overconfidence and the trio's inexperience led them to underestimate Gwen. Since Gwen has allies of her own, he resolves to fight fire with fire by finding more allies of their own. A new Sinister Six is forming. The end!
The end. Yeah, this is, and I think this will be the end of this arc and these stories probably for a while, because it does not look like the new title is going to pick up the Earth 65 stuff.
I guess the situation is what people would call, they're putting Earth 65 on the bus.
What's wrong with the bus? I love the bus.
Do you know what that trope means?
No, I don't.
That means that they're going to set it aside and then come back to it one day.
Gosh, some bus slander out here that I love. Poor public transit. It's getting a beating out here. It's a shame. I read this and I'm like, oh, that's the end of it. It's quite sad.
Especially with Gwen and MJ's goodbye, because even though Melissa Flores wasn't aware of Gwen's 616 situation, in my head, I felt like that could have been a stealth setup for her to be in 616, because other than her dad, because now the Mary Janes have broken up because of MJ going away, there's nothing to keep Gwen on 65 anymore.
Yeah, And you can kind of see them toying with the idea that Gwen just doesn't want 65 to be her home, like, at the start of this, because, like, she doesn't have, like, a good time. Like, she's struggling to, like, connect with her band, and she's struggling, like, you know, the, like, Melissa Flores talks a lot about how, like, Gwen doesn't find her 65 to be, like, a homely home and whatever.
It's mostly because since her secret identity has been outed, she's feeling less welcome because people still treat her as a criminal. And it's what Captain Stacy said during the first issue of Smash, that he doesn't blame her for running away, given that Gwen keeps on giving back to Earth 65, but Earth 65 takes and takes more from her than she gives to it.
Yeah. I would have taken a good comic book about that, frankly. It's but yeah, this is not a farewell arc to Earth 65. I look at these five issues and it doesn't feel like it's trying to push back on Earth 65 or giving closure to this chapter within Gwen's story. It's
less of a farewell and more of a goodbye for now until we meet again.
And it's obviously it's different from how it went back then, because obviously back then, like, there was no Gwen comics for like a year, but like it does feel a little bit like reading the end of Gwen and versus Carnage and going, oh, there's no end game to this. Like this is it just stops right halfway through the story, and you kind of go, oh, I guess it is like that, because it's in the sense that like this is like an epilogue issue to an arc that also kind of ended abruptly. So yeah, it's very bittersweet reading this book, because this was a really fun like five issues, I think, that we've had here, and I think this was definitely one of the cooler ones as well, with some of the fight choices that it has. So yeah.
And I wanted to bring the upside to all this is that MJ finally got to confess her feelings, because after just biting her tongue on it, like being unable to confess her feelings just because she was in a relationship with Glory, but still found the time to vent about it during her songwriting. But finally, out loud, she's able to say that she loves Gwen.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a false start with Smash, because it's Glory who tells Gwen that MJ likes Gwen. So like you don't actually get like a confession moment until the very end here, really.
Yeah. Because that I love you, it sure didn't feel platonic.
No, I don't. I think this is kind of trying to scratch the itch, which has kind of been around for a while, which is that kind of the dynamic between MJ and Gwen is flirtatious. I think, you know, if you read Gwen versus Carnage, like we joked about it all the time, but like the whole time it's like MJ is like very aggressively flirting with Gwen, and it's kind of a joke, right? Like literally, yeah. It's played for laughs, right?
Yeah, and it's dialed up to 11 with the Carnage symbiote.
Yeah, but I don't. You know, and I think the missed opportunity here was that I don't think there was ever a doubt in the reader's mind that like MJ's gay, right? Like MJ was always like queer, right? Like from like I think that theory as a thing that fans were really scratching their head about was like answered a long time ago in Latour's run.
Yeah, MJ had a couple of failed relationships with boys and then moved on to Glory.
Yeah, you know, and I think that like you know, so it's not it doesn't feel super queer baity, at least it didn't before this issue, because you know MJ was in a committed relationship. Yeah. And you could kind of go, well, you know, even if MJ and Gwen don't get together or whatever, you know, at least MJ, who is the, you know, the out gay, right, gets to have her relationship. So but now it's all sort of it's all murky now with this ending.
I think adding to the fact that MJ has now she has to go away, she couldn't even reveal her location to the rest of the band. I don't think if Glory and MJ didn't break up in Smash number 3, I think maybe now they're broken up.
Yeah, like there's no I think Glory has been completely underused, chronically underused for a really long time. Like I don't think it's a sin of this particular book necessarily, but like the fact that Glory does not, you know, she communicates all of MJ's feelings, right? Like she's, you know, responsible for taking care of MJ when she's angry, taking care of MJ when she's down bad for Gwen, and it doesn't even get to find out where like MJ's going. Like there's no goodbye kiss for Glory, right? Like there's not none of that. There's no closure for Glory. And Melissa Flores talks about this in this view and says, well, honestly, I'd write a whole issue of, you know, Glory basically breaking up with MJ, right? Like, but we don't actually get that. So, you know, we're kind of left in this weird position where, we don't know the relationship status of Glory and MJ. You know, is it open? You know, will they become a polycule or whatever? You know, or would they want to break up? And is actually Glory really hurt by all of this? And you know, there's none of that Glory's not even in this. Glory's literally thrown into a closet and left there, which I think is a real big shame.
Yeah, but keeping the focus on MJ, so Gwen's narration implies that MJ's had a few carnaged out episodes ever since they got back to New York. So that means that up until now, it seems like that MJ had to be kept on a very, very short leash with Gwen.
Is it like the speed at which Gwen dispatches Carnage at the very start of the book in that initial incident is like bing, bang, bosh, she gets it done. And there's no, it's not much of a fight, really. So you get the impression.
And it seems like this isn't news to Betty and Glory because they're not even running out screaming. They're just standing there dumbfounded.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at this point, right, why does anybody go to a Mary Jane's concert? I don't think there has, like, the amount of, if you took all of the Mary Jane's concerts from all of the Spider-Gwen books, I think you can safely say that the majority of them end up in violence of some kind. A couple of them have ended up with a few deaths.
Yeah, I think I can count on one hand how many Mary Jane's gigs have gone well.
Yeah. Which I think is a shame as well, because I feel like this book has done 50-50, like it has actually shown, like, just, you know, or at least it's shown a couple where it's gone fine and everybody's happy. So, which is more than any other title, I think. So, you know, proportionally, this book isn't as guilty of that as others, but it is. I don't think it's a shame they don't get to hang out and be happy.
but I feel like if this was animated, I think it would be really cool if there was a fast-paced montage of every time MJ got angry with Gwen and then had a rage-induced episode.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, because MJ notes that it's getting harder to control her other.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would mean that that's two personalities clashing right there.
Yeah, I think there's... I like the way that they show MJ and Carnage. I think it's really interesting. Yeah.
But that's kind of a different characterization than when Maguire wrote M. Carnage, because there she painted it as MJ. She willingly embraced Null's influence.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it was more about Null. Like, Carnage as a symbiote with its own thoughts and feelings was not really a thing. It was more about MJ, like, either wanting to go along with Null or not wanting to go along with Null. And with Null absent here, the symbiote does have a voice, which would make sense.
Yeah.
So the symbiote clearly has its own wants and desires and emotions and whatever.
Yeah, so that's why. There's even, like, when she's transforming unwillingly, the symbiote demands that it be let out, and MJ's trying to resist, but at the end she just gives in.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a weird push and pull between the two, but I think it's an interesting one. Like, I think it's a really fun characterization as well, and I like the way that the anger isn't just played as like a really intense, upsetting, emotional thing, which it is sometimes, but it's funny as well, like when she gets really upset that Gwen's on a phone call.
Yeah, and then she smashes the brick chimney.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and there's that, like, sort of like chibi look.
Yeah, and running around hurling projectile symbiotes while she's still on the phone.
Yeah.
It's comedic.
Mm-hmm.
But even after all of that, Orlando still wants MJ to be on his Sinister Six, even though she's pretty much a volatile wild card.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like the kind of person with a lot of ego and would think he could control a mon. Like, clearly he's got it into his head that he can control, like, very powerful people. And in a couple of cases has been successful in it. So I wouldn't... It's within his remit, I think.
I think, are all Octaviuses bound to be cocky and overconfident?
No, there's... what's her face from the Web Warriors books?
Octavia doesn't count because her last name isn't Octavius.
No, she's an octopus in my book.
But she's a hero on her world, while a Spider-Woman over there is a killer.
Yeah. Well, she's on this world, to be fair.
Yeah, but Orlando, or as I like to call him, Nepo Baby Octavius, because He is a Nepo baby. He inherited his dad's wealth. Well, adoptive dad's wealth.
Yeah. He's, he's very transparently just murdered his dad as well. Yeah.
Because he's like, yes, very sad. Anyway,
yeah. Which is quite dark, but he's fun. He's really sleek. It's nice to have a Dr. Octavius who seems cool.
Cool and Doc Ock probably don't belong in the same sentence. Well, maybe if it's Otto, it doesn't really belong.
No, he's fashionable and he's got cool hair and he's, you know, he's sort of, you know, he's a cool Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, it's mostly because of his handsome face, trench coat, and shiny shoes. And in my head, he's voiced by Dante Bosco, who voiced Zuko in Avatar.
Yeah, no, he's a cool guy, and he's got plans to build up his own sort of team of villains in this book.
But the nerve that he has claiming that MJ is his property, it's like, bruh, I can think of one other person that can stake a claim to MJ more rightfully so, even though he's dead. But my point, MJ's not the last slice of pizza. You can't just call dibs on her just because the only thing remotely close to staking a claim was that Banner's gamma radiation experiments, which he funded, revived her symbiote.
Yeah, I don't... I don't think he has a lot of respect for people. I think he's, you know, he's quite selfish.
Neither does Otto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nor Liv, if you want to take Liv into consideration.
Yeah. She was cool.
Yeah, especially with her villain reveal, because even if you knew that she was going to be Doc Ock, the way that she revealed that she was an Ock.
Yeah. No, that's a cool octopus. Yeah. I think clearly he's got like very sort of selfish sort of motivations, and he's got like plans to sort of build up his little villain team with his image there at the end with the panel with all the characters on it.
I think that's more of Gwen's allies and more of the roster that was shown on that screen. I like to believe some of it might have been artist's error, because it showed the people of 616 being Last Son of Kraven, Felicia, Silk, and Invisible Woman. Because if that's supposed to be Felicia 65, then why is she white?
Oh my God, Abigail, you can't ask people why they're white.
you get my point.
Yeah, they are not. So some of those are look very different to how their Earth 65 kind of spots look. They do introduce a new one. Melissa Flores mentioned this. The army guy is supposed to be a Sandman. It's supposed to be Flint Marko.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be an older version of Flint Marko. I think you can see the gray hair, because usually Flint would be like he looks like he could be in his 30s to early 40s traditionally. So I wonder if this version of Sandman still got into an accident with irradiated sand, or if maybe that was just an army experiment on him.
Could be a bit of both.
Well, it does make sense because, you know, army is taking care of the land, so it'd be easier for him to infiltrate enemy bases.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And I think Pink Velvet is just there just because she's Melissa Flores' OC.
Yeah, I mean, she's a villain that exists on Earth 65, so.
Even though she announced her supervillain retirement pretty quickly.
Very quickly, yeah. Yeah, I think she'll be back. I want more Pink Velvet. I liked that character. It was fun.
Like, I wonder if she's based off of anyone or if she's just a pure OC.
I'm sure everybody's sort of from bits of everyone else in people's minds when they write these things.
Yeah, just because the long nails reminded me of Lady Deathstrike, the X-Men villain.
Yeah. Who else do we have to talk about that we've not spoken about yet?
Well, we got Natasha. She's working as the Black Widow now.
Yeah, I don't... There's no pretense of her being a band manager anymore. Like, she is just, she's got her own like project thing that she's working on that's all secret. So,
yeah, I think because, you know, Gwen was just calling her while she was at work. It's like, what do you want, Gwen? Now isn't the time I'm working.
Yeah. And she's got like five guys that are like in some state of unconsciousness around her from a fight. So.
It's like the opposite of the interrogation scene from the Avengers, you know, when Natasha was first introduced in the movie.
Yeah.
Except this time she already turned the tables around pretty quickly.
She did, yeah. It's
And it seems like Natasha's kind of like the new sarcastic friend of Gwen's.
Yeah, I think she'd be a really interesting ally. She feels her character, and I don't know if I've said this before, but it feels very similar to Captain America 65, where you have an authority figure with ulterior motives and a secret sort of paramilitary organization. I'd like to hope that she is working for SHIELD 65 in some capacity. I think that would be interesting.
If it turns out that if Peggy's her boss, then that would make sense.
Also, I kind of like, one of my favorite fights in the Spider-Man comics has always been Captain America 65 versus Gwen 65. That's like one of the best sort of like culminations of their like respective sort of character arcs and dynamics. And I think that would be fun to kind of parallel that a bit here and have a similar sort of, you know, a mentor figure who's trying to fulfill an agenda at the same time. That's only going to barrel towards like conflict. And I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, because end of the day, Natasha, she's a spy. Of course, she's going to have an ulterior motive. All spies have ulterior motives. Even SHIELD has ulterior motives.
I mean, realistically, I don't think she is doing anything that's that different to what Octavius is trying to do. You know, Natasha's going around finding superpowered individuals, building up a team, building up an organization with an agenda.
Well, there are no Avengers on Earth 65. Maybe she's forming her own Avengers.
Maybe. I could see that.
Well, Natasha in the MCU, she did lead the Avengers during the blip.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. I suppose, yeah. Yeah, she could be building up an Avengers style team. Because, I mean, she's got Hulk. She's got, yeah. But I think there's more, it's edgier than that. It seems darker than what, you know, the Avengers are.
But edgier is cool.
Yeah, they are cool, though, I'll say.
But it seems like Natasha, she's pretty back to work quickly, considering that the Hulk broke her ribs.
Yeah, she needs a day off. She seems like one of those people who hasn't taken a holiday in forever.
And it seems like, what are the magic words that she said over the phone to M. Jarnage? Hey, Red, sun's getting real low. Which, incidentally, the sun was getting real low.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, clearly she has now brought MJ under her sway. And I would worry, like, about where MJ will be when Gwen, like, gets back to the situation, like, meets up with her again. Like, is, you know, because I don't see MJ being like, oh, I'm the new Spider-Woman of Earth 65 or whatever. Like, I feel like it's going to be like, oh, yeah, MJ is now a super assassin or something. Yeah, and you'd be no.
Yeah, the whole thing about the ending, I don't think MJ works better as a villain on Earth 65. I really don't want to see another hero angle towards MJ because, you know, we've already got that with Jackpot and 616. And this is pretty much giving flashbacks to the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon where they made almost everyone in Peter supporting cast a superhero by the end of the series.
Yeah, because Ultimate Spider-Man does M. Jarnage becoming Spider-Woman, right?
Well, Carnage Queen, and then, yes, Spider-Woman, which happened off-panel, which I consider it's kind of cheating a little bit for her to master her powers off-screen.
Yeah, which they could very well do here as well. I don't vibe with that. I don't think that, like, MJ's earned it, if that makes sense. Like, you know, like, I feel like that would require some kind of character growth.
Yeah, because according to what Melissa Flores said, MJ, she's not a bad person, but she is selfish.
Yeah, I don't, you know, she's not trying to she hasn't killed anyone. She hasn't.
No, she's threatened to, but what stops her short is due to the fact that she's not a bad person deep down. MJ's just arrogant.
Yeah.
But that was cute to think MJ thinking that she can kill Natasha. That's cute.
I'm sure she could.
Well, she'd have to hinder Natasha first.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny thing. Natasha taking MJ under her wing, you know, that's for MJ to control her symbiote. Over in 616 land, Natasha, she gained a symbiote of her own recently, which is just simply the Widow symbiote.
Oh, that's new. I didn't know about that.
Well, that's why she's I find totally random that Natasha 616 is now part of the Venom supporting cast just because she got the Widow symbiote.
I didn't even know that happened. That's fascinating.
She's going to be part of Venom War.
Oh, that's mad. I've got to look this up. What does it look like?
It's pretty much Team Eddie versus Team Dylan.
Which side is she on?
Team Dylan.
Okay, that's cool. It's a really fun design. They should have given her teeth, though.
I don't think Natasha would do so well with teeth.
I think the Widow symbiote would look cool with it, though.
But yeah, at first it wasn't clear if the Widow symbiote was spawned from either Venom or Toxin, but it turns out it's another Venom spawn.
Okay. Venom has so many babies now, this is mad.
Yeah, someone needs to put the Venom symbiote on birth control.
Yeah, it needs a cold shower.
But I think that's probably the last of it, because before the Widow symbiote, spawning the Sleeper symbiote almost killed it.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on from Venom comics, because we'll get bogged down.
But yeah, back to the original point. Yeah, it's still really funny how Natasha is taking a symbiote under her wing, and she's pretty much doing the same thing on 616.
Yeah. Who else have we got in this book then?
Mortis.
Yeah, Mortis is... I don't know anything about... Have you read any comics with Mortis in? I no clue.
No, I have never read anything with Mortis in it. All I know from doing a little bit of light reading on her bio is that she is a lesser-known X-Man villain, and she's Dazzler's half-sister, because I've mentioned this before. They have the same mom, but different dads. And her powers are molecular disruption, meaning that when she shoots out her blasts, her victims, they either suffer temporary bouts of pain or instant death, probably depending on if she set herself to stun or not.
I see. So is it like magic hands? Like, because it seems like when her hands got tied up, like she had no powers, no effect.
No, she's just attempting to blast again, but you know, Gwen sabotaged her, so...
Like, but it's in her hands though, right? Like, it's not... Like, she couldn't just sort of blast from anywhere.
Yeah, she shoots the energy from her hands.
Yeah.
But another thing, that she also has a deaf touch, meaning that if she touches inorganic matter... It's gonna die eventually, because did you see what she did with the flowers? Even when she just licked one of the flowers with her tongue, it just started to wilt.
Yeah, there's no superhero way to really implement these powers. They really set this poor gal up.
With a code name like Mortis.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's not really friendly.
Yeah.
And the only way I knew immediately that her powers are associated with death is just because of the term rigor mortis.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's invoking, I guess.
Yeah, so it seems like here, even though Lois cared enough to show up to Dazzler's Vegas concert, she's still actively avoiding her.
Yeah, some conflicting emotions there.
They say that sisters are forever, but I don't know about half-sisters, though.
I'm sure half-sisters can be forever, but clearly, I think there is a path to redemption there, though, like, by having Mortis kind of still have that sentimental attachment.
Yeah, but one of the biggest questions is, how did Orlando get into contact with Mortis?
I mean, it's possible Mortis maybe came to him through what happened with Bruce Banner, maybe?
Well, now it does seem plausible if it turns out that Banner reported back to Orlando about the gamma ray studies, because that would be the only way that Orlando found out about the Carnage symbiote.
Yeah.
So it seems like, again, because it seems like Orlando is recruiting either misfits or inexperienced villains, I think Mortis falls into both of those categories.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, she's trying to be a villain and see how's it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who's next then?
Mysterio, the paper tiger of this whole Earth.
Yeah. Just has a panic attack, poor guy.
Yeah, talking a big game, you know, summoning all of zombie Betty and Glory, even though they're just illusions, Gwenom and second form Amjarnage in an attempt to scare Gwen and MJ. But MJ's like, nope, I'm not dealing with this bullshit. And then just like, just smashes his helmet. I legit thought that she killed him.
It does look like it's a kill shot, but yeah. He's just very panicked. I also when his zombies first appeared, they were like animatronic, right? Like the zombies in his first appearance, they were like robot zombies.
Yeah, but this time he just stuck to illusions.
I suppose some of them had to have been illusions, because one of them was a Peter Parker zombie. That one can't have been real.
No. But, you know, that's Mysterio's whole shtick, illusions. He doesn't really rely on tech anymore because, yeah. You know, that's his whole appeal, like illusions, whether or not if they're like lame or they can range from like really lame to like downright terrifying. Because, you know, in old man Logan's reality, he tricked Logan into killing all of the X-Men.
Yeah,
because he made him hallucinate that his friends were the X-Men villains.
Yeah, I think he's one of those characters that is, it definitely has a big variation in how threatening they're being written by different writers.
Yeah, Mysterio is an example of he's powerful when the writer wants him to be.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's scared straight of, like, well, we know he was scared of Betty because she scared him off. And now it seems like there's another Mary Jane's member that he's afraid of, MJ herself, just because she nearly killed him.
Mm. Yeah, this poor guy.
Yeah, I think Gwen he might be a little bit afraid of, but probably nowhere near compared to Betty and MJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would make Glory the only member who he's not afraid of.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's just an exposure thing. I think he's just afraid of anybody at this point.
But yeah, it just seems like that. Yeah, you've mentioned before that Mysterio is just one of those lower tier members that no one really gives a damn about.
I think he's fun. He's a fun villain to have around, I think.
But what tier would you place him on? A C tier or B tier?
I don't know. I mean, these are Gwen villains. I want to say C. I want to say B tier because he's warranted whole issues.
Yeah. But again, as Orlando points out, this version of Mysterio is still kind of quite inexperienced, even though he did make two prior appearances to this.
Yeah.
And I like that funny thing where they're back with Orlando, Mortis, and Mysterio, how Mysterio, he just patched up that hole in his helmet with a Band-Aid, like that's going to help.
Yeah, it's a Band-Aid solution.
It reminded me of that scene in Loki Season 2, Episode 1, where when Mobius went out to go fix the loom, and then he asked Obi if the helmet was cracked, and Obi just fixes it with duct tape.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that, except, you know, this is a much more bigger... It's not even a crack. This is a hole in his helmet, which he just fixes up with a Band-Aid.
Yeah, it sucks for him.
Wait, are you trying to find that Band-Aid?
I am looking it up because I think it's funny. I hadn't really noticed that. I must admit, on my first read through until you've pointed it out to me there.
And there's another detail, is that Mortis still has webbing on her hands.
Yeah, it's a fresh fight.
Yeah, so I guess an hour hasn't been up yet, because in the past it's been established that webbing takes an hour to dissolve.
Oh, that's interesting.
And also with Mortis's remark to Gwen and MJ, because again, in that alley scene when MJ was pinning Gwen to the wall, like, she licked her again.
Yeah.
And Mortis was like, are they friends, enemies, something in between and complicated?
Gosh, even Mortis sees it.
Well, yeah, Mortis says that she was enjoying the show.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. But I think moving to a Gwen herself, because we've been talking about her cast, but like not Gwen herself that much compared to everyone else. So yeah so it seems like even before MJ confessed her feelings, Gwen still wasn't taking the hint that she's in love with her.
Well, I think at the end of Spider-Gwen Smash number 4, after having spoken with Glory, Gwen knows that MJ likes her. And I think that's clear from how she's talking. And then she has that moment where she gives MJ a gift and is like, hey, can, like, we talk about this? You know, like, maybe, like, I think there's lots, like, maybe with some time we can. And then she gets cut off, right? Because MJ's turning into Carnage again.
Yeah, during that scene, do you think MJ was, like, doing it on command? The Carnage symbiote showing up?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that, like, I know they've struggled with page space, right, because it's 5 issues, but I think they had enough time here for her to kind of go, like, to come out either way, you know? I think there was a clear opportunity at the end there, definitely, of this one, definitely. They definitely could have had a, you know, they could have thrown in the I love you too speech bubble. you know, I think there was enough space on the page for that, if that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah, but, you know, previous characterizations showed that Gwen was being oblivious to MJ's feelings.
Yeah, I think we've moved beyond that a little bit here. Yeah.
At least if this is something that Stephanie Phillips wants to address in her run, maybe have it lingering at the back of Gwen's mind that, oh, MJ just confessed her feelings to me. What do I do about this while I'm stuck here?
I don't think any of the scripts that Stephanie Phillips has written will take into account the ending of this. I think clearly they've been written in parallel, which is why they're quite incongruent with each other. And I think there was a really missed shot here. I think if they wanted to, you know, make Gwen queer, have her, you know, say I love you too, have them kiss, have them whatever, they could have done that. Like, they had the page space to do that, and they had the setup here. There's a clear setup at the end where they embrace, where it was like, oh shit, that could have been a kiss, like, easily.
That panel where MJ is wiping off Gwen's tears, I don't know about you, but I think that's intimate behavior.
It is. And I think it's always kind of like, they've kind of always angled towards that. But like, it's really, it's like, I'm just kind of upset that they don't do anything really with it. You know, they don't, yeah. It does, you know, I don't think it felt particularly queer baity before. Like, I don't, you know, I did, you know, I was always a Gwen MJ shipper. I was always like, oh yeah, Gwen and MJ, they could be a thing. But now I'm like, well, if they're not, then what are we doing here, you know? Like,
I think it's the same kind of intimate behavior I point out is, remember during the MJ and Black Cat one shot where Felicia rests her head on MJ's shoulder, and then MJ returns the gesture by wrapping her arms around Felicia's shoulder, and in the Dark Web mini at the end, they held hands when they walked out of Limbo.
I mean, I wasn't even aware of that as a bait, but gosh.
But do you think that strikes you as intimate behavior between MJ and Felicia, those two instances?
I think people should be able to, you know, show physical affection towards one and each other in a friendly platonic capacity.
But I like to think that I might have manifested MJ and Felicia holding hands as they walked out of Limbo.
Yeah. I think there are just some couples that, like, after a certain point, you're like, okay, this may as well be romantic. And I think this has kind of reached the point of no return, right? Where I think plausibly before this book, you kind of could have continued on, especially because MJ was already in a gay relationship, right? You could have very easily continued on with MJ and Glory, you know, together. Living their best life, and you know, you wouldn't be in a position where, you know, it's not like the book didn't have queer representation, or it's not like the book, you know, it's not even that like MJ wasn't queer and wasn't in a relationship with a woman, right? Like, they, you know, they were doing the lesbianism, right? But now it's like there's a clear break which has occurred now, and I think from now on people are going to look at the situation with MJ65 and Gwen65 and want more. Like, I don't, like, I read this book and I'm like, they started it, but then they don't finish it. And I think they kind of fumbled the landing a bit here. That, you know, the bait for MJ never really existed. We all knew she was queer, but we didn't know what Gwen was, is that still true? Yeah. You know, that hasn't changed.
I like to think that even though she's going to be shipped into 616, like, in my opinion, this felt like really good closure for where she stands in her friendship with MJ.
No, I don't. You know, it's they don't, because like MJ's going to a place and we don't know where it is, and we don't know how the band's doing, and we don't know if they both like each other, and they haven't had a proper conversation. You know, it's real sad, I think.
Maybe we'll get it eventually.
Yeah, I hope so. I do. You know, I really hope they move things back to Earth 65. I hope that this supporting cast isn't just, you know, cast and aside, because 616 certainly doesn't seem particularly appealing right now. And yeah, I think it's a real missed opportunity.
I have it on good word that like she's gonna have a new villain while she's over on 616. I'm not sure if it's new to her or new to us as it is new to her and OC, but it was promised that Gwen's new cast is going to have a mix of old and new people.
Yeah, she's kind of got to start from scratch.
Yeah, so it's pretty much giving her the Miles treatment because Miles had to deal with alternate versions of Peter's supporting cast. But as time went on, you know, Saladin Ahmed and Cody Ziegler gave him some new supporting characters and villains made from scratch.
Yeah, I think Miles kind of, I mean, I think there was kind of like the writing improved when Miles moved to 616, but I don't think like it was necessarily a good move, if that makes sense. Like I think that he probably would have been better off without having to share the spotlight with Peter and that, and maybe that's going to be the same here. You know, it could be that the 616 book is just, you know, really good, is really well written, and you know, like I'm going to struggle to be mad at it or whatever, but I don't, the move itself is not a good move, you know. I think this is going to be a big loss, and I think, you know, a lot of what I'm frustrated with here, probably I wouldn't be frustrated with to the same degree if I knew at least that the next title was going to be set on Earth 65, and there would be a bit of a mandate that could be passed on to the next writer to kind of continue this plot. But for what it is, it's not going to get that, at least not for, you know, a very long time. Yeah.
Maybe we might get Earth 65 back, because I really want Stephanie Phillips to last as long as Jason Latour did, as long as Sean Maguire did, as long as Donnie Cates did on Venom. Maybe her going back to Earth 65 could be after the midway point, assuming that it goes for like 30 issues.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that the 616 status only lasts a couple of arcs, you know. I would encourage folks, you know, like if you want Gwen to stay on Earth 65, you know, write an email, you know, to Marvel and let the editors know, tweet them, you know, just let them know, you know, hey, I'm gonna miss all of these cool characters that are on Earth 65, all these cool arcs and all of this cool context that sort of makes Gwen's comics interesting because she's moving to 616.
But on the other hand, you know, since she's going to get a new cast from scratch, it'd be really cool if they gave her, like, her own Rabble, you know, like how Rabble is now, like, Miles's new arch enemy.
Okay.
Like, instead of, because, you know, in the past, you could have said either Matt Murdock, Cindy Moon, or MJ be her arch nemesis. But, you know, they're alternate versions of the ones that we know. So just to give her a completely different cemented arch nemesis and it be an OC. Yeah, I can give some merit to that.
Yeah. I think when you're on 616, you want some, maybe you really want to create new spaces for her to exist within. You can't, I think one of the things that you can do with 65 is you can kind of do a lot of copies of things and you don't have to worry about other people using them. But like if that they can't do that here, if they want Gwen to have a villain and they don't want to borrow from someone else, they're gonna have to make OCs. They're gonna have to make new names, new faces.
Because the only OC villains that Gwen has are Bodega Bandit, Finale, and Dr. Lila Bennett.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's actually not that few. I'll say it's a good amount for the amount of comics she's had, I think.
And I think out of the three OCs, Finale was the one that had the biggest impact on her.
I like Finale.
Yeah, because, come on, you know, Earth 65, who's all about music, and Finale, she's a futuristic pop star who is, like Tim Seeley said, if Kang the Conqueror was Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And plus, in Shadow Clones and in Smash, you know, she kept bringing up Finale. Like, she kept name-dropping her.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, she kind of, in theory, still exists, right? Like, yeah, so she's looking, that's an arc which could be picked up in the future.
Yeah, because she only confronted the Finale that was, like, at the end of time when she was almost dying. So, in theory, the younger version of Finale is still out there.
Yeah, that's definitely a villain I'd like to see again.
I think it depends if they're going to be reading Gwenverse or not, because it just seems like Gwenverse, it's just a way to capitalize on the whole multiverse thing.
I mean, there's about five or six of the rocks I'd like them to get to before that. But yeah, it's I think my kind of my problem with this last issue is it kind of just happens to Gwen. She doesn't get a huge amount of agency here.
I think this was more of an MJ book than it was a Gwen book.
Yeah, MJ's the one who's kind of having hard choices here and that. Gwen doesn't get to say much of anything to MJ really at the end, and I think that's a real shame, because I don't think they knew what they wanted from that relationship, if it exists, or they just didn't do it. I think they were very careful to just not confirm it any which way, because they could obviously, they could have been a story around MJ falling in love with Gwen and Gwen not being into MJ, and you know, that would be a completely legitimate story, which they don't do either.
If Gwen got to meet MJ616 properly, like not that short meeting in Last Remains, I'm talking about like an actual proper conversation with MJ616 and be like, oh, did you know that my version of you is in love with me? What do I do?
Did you know that you're gay? I think it's really awkward. I think it must be really awkward for Gwen, actually, because she has to meet, like, she's very hyper aware of different versions of the people that she's meeting. Like, I think even when she was meeting Dazzler, she was like, oh, there's a version of you in 616 I've read about. It's like,
or even in Gwen Goblin's reality, how Betty and Gloria are much older than her.
Yeah, that kind of freaks her out.
Yeah, so, but I think while Betty is getting involved into Peter's shit during Zeb Wells' ASM, yeah, very recently, she's getting involved with Chasm, even. I don't know the full details, I haven't read everything yet, but I do know that she's involved in this Chasm 2-parter, and they're not really using Glory 616 so much right now.
No, I can't think of any comics I've read with Glory in the aren't Gwen comics.
I think she was invited to a Peter's birthday party in ASM number 6, Legacy 900. I'm not sure how of the amount of guests there. Like, the only ones that I know for sure who showed up at Peter's 30th birthday party are, like, Anna Maria, Flash, and Jameson. I can't think of the others who showed up. MJ wasn't invited to the party, by the way.
Because they've broken up.
Yeah. And I think plus the party was organized, I'm not sure if I remember it right, by Mockingbird.
Oh gosh.
Like, yeah, those two used to date.
Yeah, I'm gonna say they did, didn't they?
Yeah. But if Gwen finds a new boy toy in 616, how are you gonna feel? Like, who is not Miles?
I don't know. I just think it's, you know, I think it would be such a straightification of the book at this point. Also, the other aspect is like, just, you know, they just need to write it well. You know, if they really want Gwen to get with the guy, then, you know, write it well.
Well, Stephanie Phillips, she's an excellent writer.
Yeah, you know, I think it just needs page space. I don't think any of the, outside of Harry Osborn, I don't think there's been.
Yeah, Harry's MIA right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, another thing I forgot to mention with M. Jarnage is that, like, so, like, there are so many attempts to, like, as Gwen puts it, punch the symbiote back to dormancy, and it's still surfacing. Because let's see the count. Attacked by Gwen spiders during Gwenom versus Carnage. Gamma blasted. Electrocuted twice that we know of. And then some other stuff that was dealt with off-panel, and it's still bonded to her.
Yeah.
Must be permanent. And the other fact that I missed out was all of the things that could have kept Gwen anchored to 616, she really doesn't have a point anymore, because other than her dad, let's see, the band broken up, Peter dead, well, that's kind of dark, Harry MIA, MJ gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think they bring a lot of those people back. I think if this was a more permanent book.
Yeah, but I think, you know, worst case scenario, Earth 65 got blown up, maybe in an incursion or something, and there's nothing that can be done to bring it back.
Yeah, I think it's just really contrived, because I don't think there was fan demand for this. Like, I don't think people were reading Spider-Gwen comics going, we need more of this 616 Spider-Gwen content. Like, I don't think. And because they gave it, like, I think the Maguire run was like a way to try and soft launch that. Right, like they really went ham on the 616 stuff, and people did not respond to it, which was why I think, like, that last arc of Ghost Spider was so 65 oriented, and then that left Gwen in 616 for anybody to play with as if she were just another 616 character, and nobody did, right? And then the moment that she gets given a miniseries again, they memory hold it, like, you know. I don't know if Tim Seeley, like, knew and didn't want to, or just didn't know, but when Tim Seeley was handed the comic, he just wrote it as if she was on Earth 65.
In his defense, he was told, don't worry about the previous continuity, just write the pitch that we gave you.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, nobody, who wants this, right? I think there are a lot of Spider-Man fans out there who want, like, what, easier access to Gwen for team-ups and crossovers. But the truth is, like, I really feel like they set it up so that she could just be on 616 whenever. Like, she has reasons to be on 616 and the ability to move there and back again. And I think that was more than enough. So if you want to create, like, a bunch of crossovers with Gwen, like, there was never anything to stop anyone. I don't. There was that Gwen always had crossovers. Gwen always overlapped with 616 characters. She knew them. She hung out with them. She met up with them from her first couple of arcs that she ever had in her books. So, like, I don't see what we're gaining. I really don't. Like, we're losing everything.
I think at the very least, she'll get to show up in people's other books, like the minimum Spider-People's other books. If they want to thrust her into some other character's book that she has no relation to, but they feel like that, hey, she could be part of their supporting cast. That's the very least that we can get.
And the thing is, one that could have already happened, but also secondly, like, I don't want that. Like, do you want that for Gwen? Like, does anyone want that for Gwen? Like, do the people who read those books go, oh, I wish we had some Spider-Gwen right now? Like, I don't, you know, who's crying out for this? The only way I see that this sort of synergizes with what they want for the comic is just that they want Spider-Gwen front and center on 616 for some reason, or like, just want her as sort of like nested more closely to the rest of the sort of Spider-Man. And that, and it's such an editorial decision. It's not one that's organically come out of her comics. When it is explored within her comics, she has a home to return to. She has a dad. She has friends. She has she has fights she wants to pick. You know, she has enemies that she wants to battle. Genuinely, like, there's people on Earth 65 that you know, like, the amount of times they'll write a character in those stories, she's got to go fight that guy. She's got to go fight the Jackal. She's got to go fight Finale. She could go fight, you know, MJ or, you know, whoever, right? Like, yeah. Because she feels she has an obligation to those people. Like, I, you know, like, there's that whole saga that went off with Matt Murdock where she was like, I'm not going to even call anyone for help. Like, this is my fight. Like, this is my thing to fix. And she's got, like, a sense of honor around everything. I don't think there's, you know, like, I don't think there's, like, a situation where she'd want to be not on 65. Yeah. Like, even if it sucks.
Yeah, I think this new edict is just the fact that, I can say that, yeah, she does feel the least at home on Earth 65. That's why, in their mindset, maybe that's why putting her on 616 for the time being is kind of giving way to that headspace.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, it's just, this isn't what Spider-Gwen fans are looking for. I don't think it's very few people on the subreddit going, right, oh, I really wish she was on 616. Like, everybody's like, oh, this sucks as a decision.
But if she does happen to show up in a random person, like, let's say hypothetically she joins the Guardians of the Galaxy for some reason, a new iteration, I think even though that's not ideal for her to be in that situation, I'd still pick up that book anyway.
Yeah, but it's you know, I think it really sucks. I think there's just been, yeah, I think there's been a serious error made here, and I think it's a real shame.
Yeah, I think it's just a combination of page space and free reign that maybe Spider-Gwen the Ghost Spider can really cook.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like,
mostly free reign.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, you know, Donnie was given free reign.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose he was. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Latour was given free reign.
Yeah, Jason Latour also sold like hundreds of thousands of one issue, which I think bought him enough goodwill to get like 30 issues of Spider-Gwen. Yeah. So,
and right now, like, Zeb Wells, he's now getting free reign.
Over what?
Peter.
No, no way. No, he's boxed in. Peter Parker, you cannot write Peter Parker without, no way. Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, maybe to a degree, Nick Spencer before editorial had to make some changes to the story.
No, Nick. No, again, like you said, Nick Spencer's entire story got butchered. It got chopped up.
Okay. What about Kelly Thompson being able to do 50 issues of Captain Marvel?
Yeah, she didn't. Nothing. Captain Marvel didn't change. Captain Marvel stayed exactly the same for 50 issues. There was that one arc where she got to wear a cool suit, but she was exactly the same 50 issues. Kelly Thompson gave interviews about how good she thought the Kelly Pseudoconic run was and how she didn't want to rock the boat. And the thing is, like, it's a love. I liked the Kelly Thompson Captain Marvel books, but like they did not, they were not ambitious. They were not ambitious. They were 50 issues of Captain Marvel fun. I say that the first 10 issues with the alcoholism stuff and like her being in a really dark place was quite interesting, but they moved very swiftly back into the status quo of her sort of, adventure of the week sort of arcs, that sort of thing.
Okay, what about Jed MacKay and Moon Knight? I've heard pretty good things about his Moon Knight run.
Yeah, sure. That's definitely a free reign comic, probably. I don't know.
And I think that's almost like 30 issues of Moon Knight.
Yeah, I don't know much about Moon Knight, I will say. I don't think he could deviate too much from the MCU stuff, though. That's the reason he got that book, right?
Even though I don't read it either, I think, yeah, Jed MacKay doesn't take influence from the show.
Yeah. Do we want to wrap things up?
Yeah. Overall, yeah. What did we think about this book and the Smash Saga in general?
Yeah, I really like the drama here. I like the action's really good. The villains are done really well. And I think the world building on 65 has been really good. But I think like the main sort of crux of kind of what this book became was kind of the relationship or lack thereof between MJ and Gwen, and I think on that front it does kind of fumble, and I think it's a shame that it's not going to be fully realized if ever until Marvel come back to it, because
I feel like even though we got the pages that we got, it still felt like a really neat installment of where Gwen and MJ stand, and also where, again, Gwen's world building, because now she's got another new OC villain to deal with, or whenever Stephanie Phillips wants to get to him, Orlando Octavius, because he's pretty cool. He's another OC villain that I forgot to add to that list. I don't know why he slipped my mind.
I think he's kind of a legacy anyway. He's an octopus. So
true. But again, this was also pretty comedic. You know, Gwen and MJ had this, odd couple dynamic during the issue.
They did.
And again, like that emotional ending where Gwen's in tears that MJ has to go away, but at least she gets to say I love you to her, and you know, that's what really hit it for me. And also, like, I love the art here too, you know, very anime-esque.
Yeah, we didn't talk too much about that in this, but the comedic timing of everything kind of really lands really well, and I think it's because of the art.
Like I feel like in the next run, if there is a rotating art team, you know, they should tap Alba Glaz back again.
Absolutely, yeah.
And also in need if he's not too busy doing Jubilee.
Yeah, if they're not already booked and busy, they should be booked and busy.
Yeah. Even though I would go ape shit in the good way if they tapped Ryan Stegman, but he's busy with X-Men right now.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's getting paid a lot. He's getting paid a lot.
But yeah, I think back to the original point, like I really like for Alba Glaz to go back and do Spider-Gwen again.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So is that pretty much the entire episode? Because I don't think we should go through the thread because we didn't really find a lot of positive stuff there.
Yeah, what we can say is the reactions on Reddit have been really poor to this issue. There's a lot of the positive comments are still kind of going, oh, but this is not being set up. I think I would say the most upvoted comment is quite balanced. It's from brotherly_shove_215_, which says, I feel bad for Flores, honestly. This was the first actually good Gwen story in a while. I didn't really like the art, but that's just my opinion. She set up the MJ and Gwen relationship to happen, resolved MJ treating Gwen like shit, set up her in Sinister Six, and Marvel couldn't even be bothered to tell her they were putting Gwen in the 616 for a while. And I think that's kind of like, I think that's kind of the vibe, really, is that like, yeah, as much good as the book does, it's being completely undermined by what it's going to be succeeded by.
I think it seems like Gwen, in terms of continuity, might be the character that's been the most shat on continuity-wise. If it was character-wise, top spot goes to Ben Reilly.
Yeah.
But yeah, continuity-wise, yeah, Gwen's continuity has been shat on the most until Melissa Flores got to pick her up.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has been an editorial thing. Like, I don't think the decision to like have Gwen be in 65 for this arc was Melissa Flores's. She talks about editorial telling her to make 65 characters and do 65 things, and reading interviews with Stephanie Phillips, it doesn't seem like she wants, like, the 616 thing was her idea. It sounds like editorial told her, like, what's your pitch for a 616 Spider-Gwen story, right? And I think that there's an inconsistency there, and it's not the writers, it's not the people, like, no, it's not the main creators here. It's an editorial decision to move Gwen in between these books that wasn't communicated well. And I think that's a real shame.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, there's a time and a place for synergy. This ain't it.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, it could have been that, like, this was a big sort of send-off arc, and then it was to, like, thread into the next one. But, like, it's fighting against whatever's coming next.
It's just, you know, wishful thinking that we'll eventually get her back on 65 and finally wrap up every plot thread that wasn't addressed. For example, the Jackal, like, finally wrapping that up.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, though, will just be sort of lost, which I think is sad.
Or I think a miracle would be if they somehow put Gwen's supporting cast into 616, even though the logistics of that would be so confusing.
It'd be impossible. And I don't think I'd want it. Like, would you want two MJs?
They don't have to meet each other. Like, they could just be aware and, like, be dumbfounded that one version is an aspiring rock star chasing fame and Gwen, while the other one is going to be shocked that she pines for Peter Parker and an aspiring actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like I'm expecting them to touch hands with each other just like Dylan and Codex did, and then visions flood through their mind.
I think it would be really weird. I don't think it would be good.
No. And plus, you know, it's mostly consequential for Gwen because she's taking the place of Gwen 616. So if she's made public there, she needs a place to live. She needs a job. She doesn't even have a social security number.
No. And I just also, like, people would catch on, right? Like, you know, people can Google your name. Like, I don't, like, people would know that you've died and then you've come back and that you're 10 years younger. Like, people would catch on.
Yeah, well, Krakoa, before it fell, like, everyone was aware that people were being brought back to life. So maybe it's nothing new for them anymore. Just another Thursday.
Yeah.
But yeah, is that pretty much everything we have to say about the issue and our episode?
Yeah, do you want to close this out?
All right. So the next time we make an episode, we'll be reading Web of Spider-Man number 1. We're not going to read every story in there. We're only going to be reading what concerns Gwen. So we're only going to be reading the short stories of Spider-Gwen the Ghost Spider and the Spider Society story, because it seems more or less confirmed that Gwen is going to be a part of Spider Society, and it's pretty much consequential to her character there. So we'll only be reading those two short stories because, you know, we're not on this podcast, you know, we're not talking about Amazing Spider-Man. We're not talking about Miles. We're not talking about Chasm, Curse of Kane.
No, we're just talking about Gwen.
Yeah. So we're going to put the links in the description of where to buy and read the full reading list of Spider-Gwen Ghost Spider. If you want to send us your thoughts on the show or any questions you have for us, you can email us ghostspidergroupies@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at @GSGroupies. We also have a Ko-fi page if you want to chuck in a few bucks to help us with the maintenance. That would be great.
Yes, please.
But anyways, until next time, I've been Abigail.
And I've been Pax.
All right. Bye, humans.
Bye.